The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
This is Terry Raposa and Wynn Carpenter. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. And you?
Well, our guest is coming on.
Yes.
Congressman LaMalfa. And we were talking this morning, and we got to talking, and I forgot my belt. I had to run. It wasn't a pretty sight, but I'm here in one piece. Anyway, so we are here. Broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, 1460 AM, your talk radio anywhere. Streaming live on KCNR1460.com. Streaming live all over the world. And you can hear it on the archive whenever you want, because it's on there
forever and ever.
Hallelujah. So it's always on there. Yep. We have Pat, our trusted producer. How are you, Pat?
Good morning, guys. Sounds great out in there.
Good. So you're here this morning because...
Liam is down in L.A. I think he's recording another album.
Oh, yeah. He's pretty talented, isn't he?
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And a great producer. What a nice guy. He's nicer than I am.
That's impossible.
Oh, you both are nice. You're good guys.
You know, we've been talking about a few things we'd like to do, and one of them is when you go to a Board of Supervisors meeting, it seems as if you have... the employee of the month, the employee of the 2 months, the employee of the week, you have this person, that person being honored. And what we decided to do on our radio program is honor citizens. You know, I think it's good that we honor those people every week at the Board of Supervisors. It is a little bit over the top, though, every week. And they are doing a job. They're being well paid for. All the people of the county are doing a good job that they're being paid well for, and they get retirement, and they get perks. And, you know, they get recognition. Well, what about the citizens? And I'd like to recognize a citizen today. Her name is Amber Griffith, and she is the service manager over at Kia. And she's a wonderful young mom. She, her husband is one of the mechanics there. She runs that. It's amazing how she runs that department over there. Has a son. He's a soccer player. She coaches soccer. Just in, when you go in there, the service is really good. I'm not trying to push the dealership, but what I am saying is the person that works there goes over and above, and we love to see that. We love to see that in our citizenry, and we love to see it in our government. And talking about a guy who's been doing over and above for a long time, we have Congressman Doug LaMalfa on the phone. How are you, Doug?
Really, really good, Terry. How are you doing?
Good. No one's hurt me yet.
Day's not over.
But you know how that is. Anyway, you're running again, and I think that one of the things I want to bring up right off the get-go is that in talking, and we've interviewed a lot of people that are in office, lots and lots of them, one of the things I think about you is that the community-minded process in which you do your job. You did say something recently in Fall River, and I kind of want you to tell us about that, because what you did was really, I think, amazing. When you reach out just to the citizenry, the people you represent, and you reach out and you take time out really to go do something to let the people know you're there and you're for them. And I think that going into the community and doing things like this, I don't think it's about placating. I don't really even know how many people knew about it. I think it's more of a thing of understanding that you need to find out what your constituents want, where they're coming from, and to mingle with them as their representative. So go ahead and talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, thanks for that, Terry, and thanks for having me on the show here today as well. It's a simple thing, but you know, you find out what a big deal it is to the people that are involved. So what we did was we were approached, well, it's been a couple of years now, pre-COVID, and that probably explained a lot of things, but by locals up there to honor a really neat lady named Janet Euler, and she had been the postmaster at the post office in MacArthur for 32 years. And so, in a, especially in a very small town like that, you you really understand what part of the core of a town, of a community, is the post office. Like, you know, my small town of Richvale that I live near, you know. I mean, when life isn't all COVID-y and stuff like that, you see your neighbors there, you see your friends there, you see people, and, you know, you're just going to get the mail, buy a stamp, whatever. So it is really a core of a small town. And so when you have a lady like Janet who has done so much service and helped people out, and, you know, you get stories like she might come in and help get a package out on a after hours or a Sunday if somebody really needed it or something, things like that, you know, that's pretty cool. And that's really Americana right there in that spirit. So they asked us if we could recognize her by having a naming the post office after her. And that is something that's done, you know, by members of Congress around the country. And when you see what it really means to the people involved, the family and the close friends and the pride with which, you know, they take in that. It's, we had, you know, we met at the fairgrounds and had a ceremony there. The Postal Service brought personnel up there, and there was even a lunch there and such. So it was just really nice. You had 100 people from some come as far as San Diego. Most of them were nearby, and to take part in that. So it's pretty cool.
We're going to probably not take too many phone calls, and the reason we aren't is because normally when we have two lines running on this phone system we have here, it's hard for the person, both people on the phone, to hear each other. But we do have some questions here that people have either texted us or have sent to us via email. One of them is, you know, your take and really the real deal on the IRS agents. We're sort of being told out here there's 87,000 new IRS agents and they're armed. So can you kind of clarify that and give us the real poop on that?
Well, that's what the, you know, funding legislation was geared towards. Yes, that they want to hire 87,000 new ones. No, they won't all be armed, but the fact that we have more armed personnel combined in the IRS and several other federal government agencies that are not the Army makes you wonder, because there's more of them than we have U.S. Marines. Okay, so you know, spread across all the agencies. Like, why? What's going on that when you walk into the Social Security office, they have an armed guard and you got to go over and signing in?
Yeah.
What's going on with some of these other offices that, you know, I have to wonder, like, what kind of customer service is going on in these offices that, you know, the VA, they have their own police force, okay? So what is making people so angry when they go in to get something they need done? And in a lot of cases, when you're talking about certain agencies, they don't even really want the product that they have to go in there and take care of, if it's a permit or a fee or a license or something like that. They'd rather not be in there to begin with. So why are, and I don't want to be blanketing everybody, you were just commending people on good service. There's a lot of folks that are there towards good service. You know, I think you know, DMV has improved a lot for a reputation it had, you know, a couple decades ago or whatever. But, you know, you still run into issues. But what I get at is that when it's a state or a federal or local agency, why are you making it hard on the customers to get what they need? Because, you know, when you walk in, excuse me, to the county office, and if you need a permit to get your roof done or get the deck, you want to build a deck on your home, just whatever it is, why are they so obtuse sometimes about saying, okay, well, you go do this, and you come back, oh, you forgot to do that, or you get a different person? That just makes people tired and angry, and it looks like government isn't there about customer service, which it should be its number one thing. You know, unless you're law enforcement, then you got to haul the bad guys away. You're not too worried about their attitude. But, you know, IRS needs to be focused on, well, here's an anecdote on that. Is that someone was telling me that they visited an IRS building. I can't remember the stickers, but basically it's a whole floor where people should be getting work done. A room that would hold about 100, and there's three people working because we're still playing COVID, okay? And so people are waiting for tax refunds. They're waiting for clarity on how their tax filings have gone. They're waiting, like in the people of Town of Paradise, to understand what is the implications of IRS taxing the award that came from PG&E or even FEMA dollars that came that helped them in an emergency. They're having to worry already. They're already fire victims that have been burned out that I'm going to have a tax implication with IRS. So what do I do? What do I not do? What a bunch of us in Congress, bipartisan, said, many of us said, signed a letter to IRS saying, could you clarify this for us? We sent it in January because, you know, tax season will be upon us pretty soon. And these folks, you know, other fire victims like in Santa Rosa, you know, Mike Thompson was a signer, the other, you know, Democrats or Republicans on it. And they took 5 months to get back to us.
Yeah.
So, you know, now maybe that makes an argument. We need more IRS agents. I don't know about that.
Well, here's the question I have also about
the ones they have need to show up and do their job. You know, 87,000 more to go flip over every rock.
Right.
And look for every $600 transaction you had at the bank.
Right, exactly.
You know, file every single thing. It's just ridiculous.
Exactly. Now, the IRS agents, do they take an oath of office?
I think any government servant like that does.
Okay.
Takes an oath.
Okay, because the question I have with that is that a lot of times I know, and I want to ask you about the FBI's behavior and give you a few minutes on that, of course, but one of the things I think that bothers a lot of people is we always say, you know, don't blame the rank and file. The rank and file, they're just doing their job. They're good guys who are doing their job. And I would submit to you that in the IRS raid where they raided Trump, you know, you have a situation where that was rank and file people. There was rank and file people that went into the halfway house and found, you know, Biden's daughter's diary, you know, underneath the two guys had it, homeless guys wanted to sell it. And it just seems to be that the FBI, the rank and file, is carrying out things that are unconstitutional and carrying out things that are diametrically opposed to their oath of office using the excuse that they're just doing their job. I know with Mike Lindell, when they took his phone, apparently they're not giving it back. Yeah, they're not even giving that back.
We heard just following orders years ago, didn't we? Just following orders approximately 80 years ago was a common theme, wasn't it?
It was, and you're right, my friend. And the thing that bothers us is the fact that we keep hearing that. I know Dan Bongino made a good point the other day when he said, hey, the rank and file is just as responsible. They take an oath. When you take an oath to something, that is an oath to something you should have read, know, and believe in, not an oath or okay, I affirm that that does exist. That's not what you're talking about. So I'd like to sort of you to elaborate on the FBI's behavior. And really, with the IRS situation and with the FBI situation, what's the jurisdiction of Congress? What can you do as a Congress to help us with this overreaching government?
Well, both of them are behaving in a way that's beyond appalling, you know, as we've seen with the FBI. And, you know, case after case where, you know, people that have, you know, an issue that might need to be resolved with the Department of Justice or what have you, they're showing up, you know, with Trump's attorney and other people that have been in his administration showing up at 4 in the morning there. And, you know, one example, I think, was Stone bringing CNN, tipping off CNN so they could have cameras there, when basically all they're looking for might be a deposition or some paperwork or something that could have been done, you know, by a phone call. Would you come down here and bring your paperwork? No, they got to take it all SWAT team style.
Yeah,
and make a big drama out of it. It just really leaves a bad taste in anybody that cares about freedom and due process in this country, not just in government, but regular folks seeing that ought to just be horrified that they're getting away with this. And so IRS is acting this way on how they treat people with, you know, I mean, if you've ever gotten a letter from them, they say, we've changed your return, we've changed your filing. Oh, well, thanks for telling me ahead of time that you've changed. Why don't you ask me why we had what we had in there? And, you know, so it's very arrogant by them. And so when you're talking, what is the jurisdiction? Yes, they are executive branch appointed and operated. So they fall under, control of day-to-day operations with the president and the people he or she names in their whole administration. So the day-to-day operations are carried out executive, but obviously Congress authorizes the funding to keep going. They authorize the existence of them to begin with by legislation. All funding legislation starts in the House. So what is that? What's the role for us? Is decide, well, do they, are they using the funding they have to good end? Are they behaving in a way that we need to drag them in there and have more oversight hearings? And that's really, you know, once you authorize their existence, their mission, and their funding, then for that period of that year or any, you know, that portion of that budget year, our job is to drag them in and have them testify as to what is your mission. Are you following the mission that we identify and agreed on previously? Or are you doing something else? Because it sure looks a heck of a lot like FBI, IRS, Department of Justice doing something else that isn't serving the American people or would follow with constitutional guidelines and the spirit of it. They're completely out of control. So you'll ask, like, well, why isn't Congress doing something about it? That requires a committee that will act in a majority to do so. And you'll hear Jim Jordan, you'll hear Jim Banks, you'll hear James Comer, and some of our other leaders, you know, our leadership of the conference as well, saying we need to do this, we need to have this. But they, you know, basically when the Democrats are in charge, they dominate the committee. And so it'll be the prerogative of the majority whether these hearings happen or if they have any meaning to them. So what we're going to, the decision we'll be making as a country in 20-something days here, will be, are we going to continue with this path under a Pelosi majority, under a Chuck Schumer majority, for the next 2 years or not? And it's a night and day difference on the policy we're going to set for the next 2 years, especially in proximity or parallel to the Biden administration. Congress can take things in a whole different direction, the House and the Senate, and what Biden has not had to do and his people have not had to do was come to the table and negotiate with Republicans on anything because Pelosi has pretty much handed them what he wants. We saw a spending bill that came from the White House, pretty much their idea, and got rubber stamped through by Pelosi and using the budget reconciliation process in the Senate. It didn't take 60 votes. It took 51, which a 50-50 Senate means Kamala Harris is a tiebreaker. They put a few bad things through during the 2 year period using that.
So, Doug, when you're next go around after November and take back the House, you're going to get rid of Pelosi, I would hope, and then turn around a few of these issues that have been thrown at the public. Are you going to be able to do that? Will you have time to do that? Will you have the manpower to do it?
If we are given by the people a Republican majority, you know, a conservative majority, or a, you know, one that will assume the power of the House that Pelosi is not the leader of, you know, I guess I'm trying to be nonpartisan in my statement here, but yes, the
be partisan, please.
Be partisan.
We don't want nonpartisan.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
But it'll be the Republican-led House or Democrat-led House. So if we net at least 7 seats, we will have a Republican majority. We're hoping it's going to be a little stronger number. I think if I had to prognosticate on that, it would be 20 new Republican seats and up to 40 if there's a, you know, if the wave is a pretty good tidal wave.
So you could take it back easily. I mean, you could take it back once that's established, right? Once the election's done and you have the 20 or 40, whatever may happen, then you have the House.
Yes, sir.
And then you can take it back.
We'll be swearing in. Yep, we'll be swearing in and electing a new speaker. That speaker will be a Republican.
Now, we're going to make sure it's not a rhino, correct?
It won't be a rhino.
We've got a few of those out there still, and we're tired of dealing with the rhinos because they're more dangerous than the Democrats half the time. So those are the things that, me personally, locally here, that's what we have to deal with. So we've got to watch what we're doing with that, even at the national level, so we don't continue down this cobblestone path of, you know, trying to figure out what the heck we're doing, you know, and getting people to act. But You get the majority, you get the get it turned around, and you get Nancy booted out of the chair. And if you could do me a favor and just send her someplace else, I mean, altogether. I mean, Guantanamo looks like a good place. Well, I'm serious. I'm just done with that person. Oh, my gosh. And I'm not the only one. And please do us a favor on that, if you could. Just kind of, you know, send her someplace else.
Well, I think she's, if, you know, putting her from the lofty heights of being the Speaker of the House to back in the minority, it's highly expected that if indeed that does occur via this election, which is expect, you know, the prognosticators expect that, she will leave. She will retire and try and, the rumors are she'll take a ambassadorship to Italy or an ambassadorship to Iran or the Vatican. So she's, they've bought property in Florida, which is kind of funny because
wow.
of how they talk about Florida and DeSantis. Oh, yeah. You know, so it's funny watching these lead Democrats buy land where their ocean rise would eat up their house. You know, Obama up there in Martha's Vineyard, it would, the sea level rise they try to scare us with this whole climate change religion. They end up moving to the coast there where they could be affected by what they scare us with.
Well, then they should have a special.
Yeah,
they should have a special property tax. Then, when those jackwagons buy properties in states like Florida, then they should have a special property tax assessed to their property that is way above and beyond what the locals are paying, so that you know the locals can kind of recover a little bit and have some benefit for having them as a neighbor.
Well, I mean, you can say that, but I don't think that sounds like a constitution.
I know. Yeah. I know.
You know, the thing is,
none of it's constitutional.
Right.
Born of frustration, so I get it.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing is that most people are upset, and we can talk. We're going to go after the break here, and we still got a couple of minutes before we go. But there's a couple of questions I have for after that. But one of the things that most people recognize is that there really is no cost. There is no way to stop bad behavior from elected representatives. There's no consequences. They can break their oath of office. They can break the United States Code.
The law.
They can break the law, and there's no consequences. And I think that, I think that people are going to be at a point where they're going to have enough. And I know they're getting that way in Shasta County. We're getting pretty popular here. And, I think that we have to maybe talk a little bit about that. There are no consequences in place for people whom we elect that are supposed to be servants of the people with anything that they do. And I want to get into that a little bit after the break. And then, also there's a couple other questions I have. And, you know, I've known you for a long, long time. And I think that, and I know that you've been fighting for a long, long time for liberty. And I've noticed something about you, and we'll go after the break right after this, but I've noticed something about there. There seems to be a little bit more of a firmness, toughness in your positions of late. I'm not saying that you weren't ever strong in your positions, but I think that I believe you're feeling like the rest of us. You pretty much had enough. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, I guess I've pretty much always felt that way, but maybe it just manifests itself in a more urgency of the emotion I project, or the words, or what have you. Yeah, I get what you're saying. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah, it's kind of a good thing, but you get crankier as you get older. I'm perfect. I mean,
that's why Terry's so cranky.
That's
so
why I'm
almost old.
Cranky. Mean Mr. Mustard.
Well, you've been around the block enough times that you're just less patient with nonsense. You know,
absolutely.
You know, somebody gives you a non-answer, whether you know it's a at a counter where you are getting a permit, or you're on the phone with somebody, or you're on the phone with the utility wondering why is my bill this way, nobody can tell you the answer, you know, or even just something silly at the check stand where the price, you know, says it's on sale, and here's the price, and they ring up something else.
Don't you love that?
Say, oh, it's, you know, there's just no answer. It's like, come on, you know, you're like, well, do your job. So
there you go.
All right, sir, we're going to take our first break and hang on with this congressman, and we will see the congressman and all of you on the other side. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Science proves your best sleep is vital to your mental, emotional, and physical health. The Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts to help keep you both effortlessly comfortable. And it's temperature balancing, so you stay cool. So you're at your best for yourself and those you care about most. Life-changing sleep, only from Sleep Number. Don't miss our weekend special. The Queen Sleep Number 360 C2 smart bed is only $9.99, plus special financing. Ends Monday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com. Special financing subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store for details.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course, on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today, or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Convert your calling into a career at Shasta College this fall. Get a jump start on being transfer ready, or boost your current career skills quickly and affordably with a certificate or degree. Our fall semester offers flexible class times and formats with online and more in-person offerings. Plan your tomorrow today by enrolling at Shasta College. Achieve more. Earn more. Shasta College. www.shastacollege.edu. Enroll online today.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air.
Yes,
talking about the state of mind, son. Talking right about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty.
It is a wave.
Yes, sir.
It's a wave on a dust road.
That's why we do this. We've been doing this for 10 years. Just like we need to make sure that we're getting our state.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Congressman, are you there, brother?
Yes, sir.
Good. Okay, the question. This is a question I have. And I thought about this morning after we talked. And, you know, I've known you for a long time. Gwen and I have known you for a long, long time. And, you know, you when you were senator, you were you were all over the place. You were amazing. We were getting, it seemed at that time when you were the senate in the Senate of the state of California, we really were making headway toward our liberty. Have you ever thought about and you seem to be more engaged. I think, I mean, the sense I've always gotten from you is, you like to be in the trenches with your constituents, and I think that's rare, and I think it's a tremendous trait. Have you ever thought about running for governor? And I'm surprised you didn't run for governor. You ever thought about running for governor?
Oh, which state?
Well, which state would you run for governor for?
Jefferson.
Okay, well, I'm glad you said that, because to me, I think that there are some things that can go forward on that now. You know, we talked about the consequences in the first half hour. We talked about that there aren't any consequences. The state of California has usurped the California Constitution in Article 3, Section 1, in which the state of California is recognized and does recognize the United States Constitution as the supreme law of the land. So everything that was delegated to the federal government via the Constitution from the states trumps, no pun intended, anything in California Constitution or law. Now, the other part of that is that people take an oath of office in the California Constitution, Article 20, in which their sole purpose, basically, is an oath to first the United States Constitution and second the California Constitution. The point is, I would submit to you that I think California has committed sedition and insurrection. And I would use Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 of the United States Constitution, where California is a sanctuary state, which basically is unconstitutional because the position of naturalization we delegated as the states to the federal government. The second thing the state of California has done, including two governors, which is Brown and Newsom, is they had, without the consent of Congress, they have made deals and they have made different agreements with other states, sort of like what happened with the dams. That also is breaking the constitutionally the Constitution. The other thing that they've done is that they've, the governor himself, Brown especially, which he still could be held for this, has violated Title, the United States Code, Title 8, Code Section 1324, where harboring and shielding an illegal alien via sanctuary state is a felony. And that is a felony, and that's the United States Code. And these three things have happened along with many, many other things. The mandates, the prosecution under mandates, all those things that are unconstitutional, both in the state of California and the United States, but there's no consequences. So my question is, a position of going to Congress only and creating as many states as the people of California think we should have to get proper representation, when are we going to introduce that? Because they are breaking the law. They are being seditious, and it's been insurrection. And I'm sorry to throw all the numbers at you and all that stuff, but the point is that where in the world do we draw the line? Because the Constitution is only a piece of paper, Doug, unless we use it.
Excuse me. It's the Constitution is a very important document that protects us, but we have just as much of an obligation and responsibility to protect it. That's exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, the people, the honorable people that were the founders, you know, they weren't all perfect. We get that. But, you know, I think by and large, their own checks and balances of who they were, they put together a pretty amazing document and a pretty amazing call our form of government an experiment. And so we have to continue to hold that up. And I think was it Adams that said that our form of government can only be properly executed by a moral and godly people. And when you don't have that anymore, you know, as good as the checks and balances of the three branches of government are, you see what we have happening, right? So in order to improve the things you're talking about, the you know, when you see the lawlessness by the state, by Newsom and others on enforcing the border, you know, Arizona mm-hmm. does a halfway decent job. Texas is trying really hard, but in between you have New Mexico and you have California that are doing nothing. I visited Yuma, Arizona in the spring, and it's just amazingly horrific how bad the conditions are along the border with the trash, the open sieve that it is in areas where they have not been able to complete the fence. And the human factor is that the unspeakable things that happen to women that are coming through, it's the cartels that are making all this happen. They're abusing them in ways we can't say on the radio here. You see laying on the ground the evidence of that, of birth control medicines and pills and things like that, the containers of them there, because they know they're just going to be abused in order to get here. Wow, that's really humanitarian for anybody to have a policy that would give the green light to people to do that. You know, so you're talking about maybe forming more states. I think what was attempted, especially during the Trump era and Republican majorities, was that when you have sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, we were attempting to pass the legislation and in the funding bills, defunding cities, defunding states, mm-hmm. or at least taking a portion of their money mm-hmm. to make it hurt if they're doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to continue to battle to do in any budget and any appropriation. Now, it comes down to what kind of numbers do you have in Congress that you can pass such legislation? We can pass it through the House, typically, in the Senate. It's more difficult under most bills that require a 60-vote majority unless we have the guts or willing to do it on budget reconciliation in the Senate, which then is a 51-vote because it's it's seen as modifying an existing budget, and that's, for whatever reason, that's what the Senate rules have. And so we did that in our majorities, and Democrats have used it a couple times in their majorities to pass giant spending bills. So the tools we have, and we have people that want to use them, are such on policies that bad policies that states would be doing, you know, with inept border policies, inept cooperation with federal agencies on picking up illegal immigrants when they bag them at a jail somewhere. You know, San Francisco's completely uncooperative that way, and so it'd be the whole Newsom administration. You know, the drugs running across the border.
Well, we let them. You know, I mean, that's the whole
list,
thing.
We
let them.
The list goes on. Yeah, the list goes on.
Okay. Hey, Doug, alongside of that a little bit, with the accounting of, is there a system set up for the accounting of all the money that's given to other countries for whatever reasons that it's given? Is there any agency, any department, any one person, or any body of people that are accounting for all that money that leaves our country that we, all the taxpayers, are paying for to go to those countries? And once it's dropped in their bank account, who's accounting for that money? And where does it go? And once it goes to those other countries, is there any checks and balances there that they're using it for, I guess, the legitimate reasons that it was given with the intent of being given from our country? Is there any way of double-checking that to see where we're at, or is there a system in place?
Well, answering the second part, is it in place? It's in theory. I think the last chance you really see what kind of number you're sending over there is when it's written in the legislation of, we are going to send X amount to, you know, this country for this program or that. But once the authorization has been given to the Treasury and the related department that would be doing that, the accountability falls way off. You know that, and that's why you asked.
Okay.
I know it too. And so, so from the moment where Congress authorizes, you know, X amount of billion for this or that, and the point where it meets the road, you know, well, like meeting the road, you know, you've driven past a construction project on the highway. You can see, like, what are they doing out there? Why does it cost twice or triple per mile of what a private sector pavement job would be? Or why is California's paving a road have to cost double of a neighboring state? Because there isn't accountability.
Right.
And
we had a question.
How do you achieve accountability? It is oversight hearings. It's much more time being spent making bureaucrats dance to the tune of those that are elected. Because I always illustrate the food chain as the people are on top. You know, the voters, the citizens, the taxpayers, they're on top. The next tier below is those that they elect. People interact with their government by the election process. And that's, you know, we were talking earlier, what do you do about this? What do you do about unaccountable politicians? Well, I mean, it's a pat answer, but it is, at election season, you can do something, either make them feel the heat or change them out. You know, town hall hearings in between that are that. But the thing is, like, look at Gavin Newsom right now. In his arrogance, he's spending money in Texas and Florida attacking those governors instead of even paying attention at home here. He's phoning it in, basically. He believes he's going to win, you know, by 60-40 in this state. And if you ask why I don't run, it's like, well, I don't know where I'm going to be more effective at doing something as, you know, taking a shot in the dark for governor or continuing to try having a voice here. So, you know, it's a tough deal. And what that really, really requires is just a big sea change in how the voters, how the voters are going to hold their people accountable that they elect and what they ask of them. If all they're looking for is free stuff, or, you know, they're going to believe climate change all day long, or they are going to care what people's sexual orientation is or what the gender of somebody working in the agency is, you know, or all the racial stuff. But that's the only thing we're going to talk about. We're not going to get anywhere. And right now we have a country that's genuinely hurting and is losing its influence in world affairs. It's a crazy, the water that got taken away, and you're feeling it right there in your backyard with the Anderson Cotton Irrigation District and such. And there's a lot of nonsense being spread about that right there, too. That's a different conversation, perhaps. But they've taken the water, and it's devastating your area right there in your backyard over claims that'll help fish or claims that'll help the Delta. You know, their water rights have been violated. That's Bureau of Reclamation in concert with Fish and Wildlife, and then a state board that is, I think, out of control on dictating the federal water allocation for a federal project. So I know I'm kind of skipping around here, but
what it boils down to is
accountability right. by the elected, because people on top elected right. below that. And below that is the bureaucracy that we create, that we hire, that we fund. And so we have a direct responsibility to say, bureaucracy, what is it you're doing here? What's your mission? Are you following your mission? Why are you over here doing this and doing that? And so the White House administration should be cracking the whip on the IRS and cracking the whip on FBI, Department of Justice. And, you know, when it's Biden, you know they're not going to. But
right.
when it's Trump or whoever the Republican's right. going to be in 24 that hopefully wins, it's not easy for them because it is an entrenched bureaucracy, and the media covers up and lies for them. So, you know, people out there are hearing like, well, Trump's doing this, doing that. He's going to get rid of all our cops or whatever. No. And so, you know, you have to be somewhat cognizant of the public opinion and help shape that. But you do have to just punch through and do what's right, too. But you're not going to get a fair shake out of the media of how it's being reported, and that could cost you the next election. So all these factors are there that temper the ability to really go make big wins on this. But, you know, we have to anyway, right?
Right. You know, I think the thing is, too, we just got a phone call. I was out of the room. I apologize for interrupting a few minutes ago, but I had to go in the other producer's room and get this phone call because we have had calls coming in. But I think the important thing here is that understanding, I know that we had we had, and I'll only say this about your opponent, we had your opponent on and interviewed him, and he doesn't even understand the jurisdiction and the job in which he's running for. I'll just say it. We told him that. And, you know, the thing is that the jurisdiction is so important because you can't interpose as a congressman if the jurisdiction isn't there. We just got a call from someone who was saying, could the congressman help us with a forensic audit for our county? And I don't believe you have jurisdiction for that, do you?
Well, not really, unless there is a federal component.
A federal breach,
that.
Right.
You know, if there's somehow something that reported, if you're talking an audit, is it a IRS related issue? Ultimately, you know, I mean, we're happy to help. You know, answer a question or point people in a direction to help them. But if it's a county issue, then you know, then you got to get your supervisors cracking on getting their department heads
right.
that they hire and they pay for to
right.
you know, via tax dollars
yes, sir.
To do their jobs.
Yep.
And so we're not trying to dodge anything. We'll answer. You know, we get a lot of state California questions too, and we'll refer them out when we don't have anything to say. But a lot of times we can, from knowledge we have anyway, say, oh, well, that state agency should be able to help you there. We can frequently point people pretty much one stop. But,
right,
you know,
that way. Right, and the money is an important thing. I mean, the jurisdiction, what you just said about, you know, people who violate the immigration laws, you know, how you can do that with funding. I think those kinds of things are things that are important. But I also believe that as far as anything to do with an election, as far as an audit goes with an election, is there any jurisdiction you would have as far as creating, seeing something that's an irregularity in a county, or would that be state jurisdiction?
Well, the Constitution lines out that the states are to basically run their own elections.
Right.
And they report their results. That's part of why the concept of the Electoral College, the federal government
right.
recognizes all the states as 50 individual elections. And the way they tally that is the Electoral College, they said equal represent, you know, each delegate is in equal in their representation as a part of each state. And so that's where the melting pot happens is, yes, the Electoral College. Even, but, you know, the states also need to operate in a way that's ethical. And we would have the ability, if they're not running things ethically, that we don't recognize their federal representatives, ultimately, their elections at the federal level. Like, you know, so if San Francisco, for example, keeps pushing having illegal immigrants vote, they're going to get to the point where we will not recognize their federal elected representatives or their votes. Who knows, that may taint the entire state's elections if you're talking a statewide, like a U.S. senator or something. So those are things we'll have to deliberate. And that really is part of the conversation that was happening on January 6th that has been blown up into a political football like you haven't seen in a long time, where we are allowed and obligated to ask questions during the electoral vote count that day. A lot of people don't know, but I received a letter, all of us received a letter from the Pennsylvania State Legislature that said, you know, we've reviewed that even though we certified the election in the state because they all felt this big hurry to get it done by December 12th, etc., they would like us to put the brakes on certifying their electoral votes on January 6th until a little later date, so their legislature would have more time, because their government in Pennsylvania violated their own law as to how they would run the election. They didn't change the law via a legislative process. They changed it by a signature. And so these things are a lot more complex or nuanced than what is just glossed over. So January 6th, you know, you have the obligation to, at least if there is a question, to ask it. But they say, oh, that's sedition, you're an insurrectionist, you're going to overthrow the election. Like, no, that's not it. We're asking questions, and it's been done before. You know, the Democrats, when they were in charge, they attempted to do that on George W. Bush's second election, as I recall. And our own Barbara Boxer stepped forward to bring it to a vote. You need one senator to join the House on that to bring it to an actual vote, and they did that. They voted on, I believe it was Ohio in 2004. So where's all the insurrection and anarchy and, you know, seditionist talk about that when they did that? You know, they didn't win that day. They didn't win that vote. It didn't hold. So, you know, the process actually worked as the process worked on January 6th, even though we had a riot there. We went back to work hours later and completed our job as we're supposed to. So, you know, this is all being blown way out of proportion. And people are trying to use that politically in this election to say, they were tearing down democracy. Well, first dummy, it's not a democracy, it's a republic. Okay?
So. Yep. Yeah, I love it when all those great congressional people that are on the other side talk about the democracy this, democracy that. I just want to reach through the television and strangle them. It kills me that they're so ignorant.
When it's fingernails on the chalkboard for me too. Even my own, you know, colleagues and friends, like, why? What? Come on, you know, quit. They're actually feeding into a narrative, because I think the media likes to use that term, because democracy equals Democrat, you know.
Yep.
But, you know, we recite it every day when we start session, and to the Republic.
To the Republic.
For which it stands.
Yes, the Republic.
And written right on our California flag, California Republic.
Yep.
Texas Republic.
Oh,
know?
Boy.
All of them.
Yeah, you know, as we look at this whole thing and look at what's happening with our country, you know, when the states form their compact, which is a contract between legitimate governments, and created the Constitution, actually created the federal government. A lot of people now seem to think that there is a compact between the states and the federal government, where the federal government is really the creation. I think the overturning of Roe versus Wade threw a monkey wrench into that, in that the Roe versus Wade decision is saying, hey, you know, this isn't our job. And I will say that there are some Democrats. They want to make Roe versus Wade the law of the land. And basically, there's no jurisdiction for that. I kind of want to. We've got about 5 minutes left. If you could give us just a couple of minutes on what your thoughts are there.
Well, the Supreme Court acted properly in overturning it, and what it was not overturning abortion itself. It overturned the process by which the Supreme Court acted in '73 was to basically create a law out of whole cloth using a privacy clause or something, you know. So it's what's interesting is that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, before she passed, even pointed to it, saying, like, look, this will not stand, because it was done, as you know, as I said, just creating law out of whole cloth like that. And so she said it, she got it, and they didn't go burn her house down, did they? She was a hero to many, and I'll give that she was indeed had an incredible career and such, and even Trump said that. But, you know, that she recognized that has to mean something to somebody. But right now, the Democrats and the left and the media want to burn it all down because it's a great election talking point, they believe, for them. Well, the more we learn about abortion, the more we learn about, well, what's obvious to us on this call here, but what life is, what a life is, you know, it's just becoming more and more plain to more and more people that are in the middle ground or that are, you know, just not paying attention that every pregnancy is a human life. It's not going to be a puppy. It's not going to be a football. It's not going to be something else, you know. And so the court's decision was such that the states can legislate what they will do with that policy. Right. Now, a lot of states did have, they call them triggers, to revert back to a pre-Roe era, that they did not have legal abortions before 73, or they had maybe extreme exceptions or whatever. So now this is something those legislatures can contemplate. So what does California do? Well, not only do we have legal abortion, but we want to have it for everybody else. They want to have, you know, minors come in unknown by their parents in the state, have us pay for their travel and pay for their lodging and pay for the abortion itself. You know, you see these sellout corporations with their soulless CEOs saying, well, we want to have, if our state that our corporation is doesn't have abortion is legal, we'll pay to send our employees to another state and get it done.
Yeah.
Well, these guys are like soulless reptiles that are do this again and again and again.
That's a breach, too.
And yeah. I think it comes down to, you want to have a super cynical thought on that, is that it might be so they can avoid the benefit payments that are being required more and more for family leave, for pregnancy leave, you know, for the husband and the wife that's proliferating more and more, right? So they say, well, shoot, they might be in their back corner of their boardroom saying, if we pay for the abortions for them, that'll save us a lot of money and productivity from having to not bring in temporary help and pay for all that. Who knows what they're saying in there, but this is a really sick thing we have going on here.
Doesn't surprise me a bit.
Nope.
Hey, Doug, really quickly, I was going to ask you about this earlier, but can you explain to us what went behind the $40 million to Ukraine? Can you tell us, you know, what was going on there and why the vote was the way it was? And you only have about
$4 billion?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, billion,
it was more in the beginning of this whole thing, and it was difficult. That was a difficult vote for me. I did support it, and I got some people pretty upset, thinking like, well, you know, why are you doing that? But I look at it as you do have Russia completely out of line, bullying and trying to take over a state that has been independent of it for quite a while, and one that wants to be, you know, part of the European Union, part of a European way of life. And they're not perfect, and they're getting called all sorts of corrupt things, you know, about their government. And that may well be, maybe not. But I think we also can't cast a whole lot of stones about how perfect our government is in this state or the country. So that all said, a good portion of that $44 billion also was to replenish our own military supplies that Biden had sent over there.
Right.
So at
right.
least, I'm not going to be great on the numbers, but at least $8 billion was that.
Right.
Several more was humanitarian.
Okay.
Help for people that have been bombed out, you know, the medicine, clothing, and other things. We help everybody in humanitarian situations like that. So Ukrainian folks were victims of
thankful,
that as well.
Been thankful. Okay, so
we have to contemplate, is this a winnable war? I don't know, but resisting Putin and the bad he's doing seemed like the right thing.